Available now from Graphic Audio.
Are you on your Creed?
What can I do for you?
We need you to go to Antarctica.
Why?
It's classified.
This is getting ridiculous. Okay, pal. Just what in the hell have you got me mixed up in here?
I found something amazing. This.
This is incredible.
According to the carbon dating we did, it's over 10,000 years old.
There's no way humans could have made this 10,000 years ago. You're not implying extraterrestrial?
Why not?
Where in the world did you ever find that?
I'm on a dig at the base of Horlick Mountain.
So when do we leave for the dig site?
Tomorrow morning, first thing.
So, you're our newest addition here.
I guess so.
Welcome. My name is Colonel Thompson. I'm in charge of the operation here at Horlick. Allow me to introduce you to Major Braden.
What the hell are you doing here?
You're in trouble, sweetheart.
You bastard. You sold me out.
The time to come clean is now, Miss Creed. Major Braden, you have something for me?
Yes, sir.
You took my laptop, so what? Go ahead and open it.
Any last words?
Boom?
Too late for that, my dear.
Oh, Anya?
You've got to pull it together. There's a bomb rigged to explode in less than 30 minutes. It's gonna bring down the entire mountain on top of us unless we can get it deactivated.
This is not a drill. We need to evacuate the camp. Move, people!
I'm staying to help Hawk and his team.
You could die.
Maybe.
I'll never forgive myself if you die.
I've got to go.
Rogue Angel 16. Polar Quest. From Graphic Audio.
And now, for our feature presentation.
Graphic Audio, a movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents Simon R. Green's Forest Kingdom Saga, Blue Moon Rising. Narrated by Terence Aselford, with performances by David Coyne, Elizabeth Jernigan, Scott McCormick, Richard Rowan, James Konacek, Christopher Graybill, Mort Shelby, Andy Clements, Tim Getman, Peter Stray, Joe Brack, Jonathan Watkins, Dylan Lynch, Michael John Casey, Eric Messner, Ken Jackson, Michael Glenn, and Nanette Savard. Blue Moon Rising, Part 2.
Princess Julia wandered down yet another dimly lit corridor, looking for the Seneschal. She needed something to occupy her time, and the Seneschal's expedition to rediscover the lost South Wing had seemed a heaven-sent opportunity. At last she spied him, scowling at a large and complex map, while a dozen heavily armed guards waited impatiently and practiced looking evil.
But I seem to recall...
Hello, Seneschal.
Yes? Oh, Princess Julia. What do you want?
Julia looked at the Seneschal. It was the first time she'd gotten close enough to talk to him. Tall, painfully thin, and prematurely bald, his aquiline features were permanently occupied by doubt, worry, and a frantic desire to get as much done as possible before everything fell apart around him. He looked even older than he was. His faded top coat had seen better days, and his boots looked as though they hadn't been polished in years. He was fussy, pedantic, and bad-tempered, and those were his good points. But he was also the best damn tracker the castle had ever known, so everybody made allowances. Lots of them.
I've come to join your expedition.
Julia watched interestedly as the Seneschal rolled his eyes and shook his fist at the ceiling.
Oh, it's not enough that the maps are hopelessly out of date. It's not enough that my deadline's been brought forward a month. It's not enough that I've been given 12 Neanderthals in chainmail as my guard. No, on top of that, I get lumbered with Princess Julia as well. Well, I'm not putting up with it. I'm the Seneschal of this castle, and I will not stand for it.
I knew you'd be pleased.
The Seneschal seemed torn between apoplexy and a coronary, but finally settled for looking terribly old and put upon.
Why me, Princess? It's a big castle. There are hundreds of other people you could annoy. Why not go and persecute them instead?
Because I need something to do. I've got so many worries and problems when I'm just sitting around doing nothing that I'll go mad before the night's over. Your expedition is just what I need to shake the doldrums away.
This is not a constitutional, Princess Julia. We will be going down some of the most remote and uncharted passages of this castle, through
areas...
And
that's exactly what I need. The passages of this castle are fascinating. I promise I'll try really hard to be helpful and not get in the way.
Oh, you always do so much more damage when you're trying to be helpful.
He noticed the storm clouds gathering on Julia's brow.
Oh, all right then, if you must. But stay close to me. Don't go off on your own, and please, Princess, don't hit anyone until you've checked with me first.
Of course not.
All right, come along.
And so they began their search. Soon she'd been walking for what seemed like hours, mostly in circles, through what had to be the most boring corridors Julia had ever seen. She was beginning to think the Seneschal was doing it on purpose. Which was why, sometime later, a very bored Julia was following the Seneschal down a dimly lit corridor somewhere at the rear of the castle, and rapidly coming to the conclusion that this had not been one of her better ideas. And then the Seneschal took a sharp turn right, and everything changed. With all its many corridors and halls, it was inevitable that parts of the forest castle would fall into disuse, and Julia felt her interest reviving as it became obvious that nobody had walked this corridor in years. The wood-paneled walls were dull and unpolished, and thick cobwebs shrouded the empty lamps and wall brackets.
We need lanterns! There's no telling what's beyond here!
He led the party on, down the corridor. Julia drew the dagger from her boot and carried it in her hand. The dim light and the quiet reminded her uncomfortably of the dark wood.
Halt!
What's wrong?
It's a fork.
So? You've been running through these corridors with barely a pause for hours.
This branch is different.
Julia moved cautiously forward and studied the two branches. The left-hand fork seemed to curve round and head back the way they'd come, while the right-hand fork led into an unrelieved darkness that raised the hackles on the back of her neck. Julia shook her head to clear it and made herself breathe deeply. The dark wood was miles away. A little darkness couldn't hurt her. Julia clutched tightly at the hilt of her dagger, as though for comfort, and smiled grimly. Even after all this time, she still needed a lighted candle in her room at night before she could sleep. Like Rupert before her, the long night had left its mark on Julia.
I've got it!
Oh!
Princess? Are you all right?
I'm fine. Which way?
I'm not sure yet. According to all the maps, we should take the left-hand branch, but that feels wrong, very wrong. No, to hell with the maps. We have to go right, into the darkness.
I might have known.
What? What was that? I do wish you wouldn't mumble, Princess. It is a very annoying habit.
Julia shrugged, unoffended. The Seneschal's perpetual air of desperation made it impossible for anyone to take his remarks personally. He was so obviously mad at the world, rather than whoever he happened to be addressing at the time.
Why are we looking for the South Wing, Sir Seneschal?
Because, Princess, it has been lost for 32 years. Missing! Unable to be found! Vanished from human ken, absent without leave. It may not have been a particularly impressive wing, as wings go, but we were all rather fond of it, and we want it back. That's why we're out looking for it. What else should we do? Throw a party to mark the 32nd anniversary of its disappearance?
No, Sir Seneschal. I mean, why are we looking for it now? You've managed without it all these years. Why is it suddenly so important?
Ah, And suppose if I don't tell you, you'll just make my life even more of a misery?
You guessed it.
The seneschal glanced furtively at the waiting guards and then gestured for Julia to lean closer.
It's not exactly a secret, but I'd rather the guards didn't know what we're after until it's necessary. I'm sure they're all perfectly loyal to the king, but why take chances?
Well, get on with it.
We're looking for the South Wing, because the South Wing is where the old armory is, and I don't need to tell you what that means.
Yes, you do.
The old armory holds the katana.
I suppose that's supposed to mean something to me?
The katana! Shh! The king intends to draw the katana, and so we must find the old armory.
Got it. Now I'm with you.
Oh, I'm so glad. Anything else you'd like to know?
Yes. If this katana is as powerful as everyone makes out, how is it that no one's tried to find the old armory before and take the sword for themselves?
Over the years, a great many people have tried.
So what happened to them?
We don't know. None of them has ever come back.
Huh, terrific. I noticed you didn't tell me any of this before we set out.
I thought you knew.
Assuming we get to the old armory, a prospect that seems increasingly unlikely the more I think about it, I take it you will be able to recognize the katana when you see it?
The seneschal stared into the darkness of the right-hand corridor and smiled grimly.
The katana is a short sword, not more than 3 feet in length, and it has no point. Going back several hundred years, it used to be called the Sword of Mercy. It was presented to each forest king at his coronation as a symbol for justice tempered by compassion. And then James VII came to the throne. He took the katana and set a touchstone within its hilt, a sorcerous black gem that enslaved the minds of all who beheld it. Legend has it that the demon prince himself gave King James the stone. But records of that time are scarce. It was a time of murder and madness, in which the katana became the sword of compulsion, a symbol of tyranny. No one has drawn that blade since James was overthrown, but even sheathed, it's said the sword has an aura of blood and death and terror. I've never seen the katana, Julia, but I don't think I'll have any problem recognizing it.
The seneschal turned away and glared at the waiting guards, who were peering into the darkness ahead and hefting their swords warily.
And now, if you've run out of questions for the time being, Princess, I think we should press on before those Neanderthals start carving their initials into the woodwork.
He strode confidently forward into the gloom of the right-hand corridor, leaving Julia and the guards to hurry and catch up.
There's a lot to be said for bravery and heroism, but this is getting out of hand. I should never have let them take away my sword.
The guards huddled together and held their lanterns high, but still the darkness pressed hungrily against the sparse pool of light the lanterns cast. In the constant gloom, it was hard to judge distances, and Julia began to wonder if the corridor had an end, or if the damn thing just went on forever. She looked back the way she'd come, but the original junction was already lost to the darkness.
Damn rats. After 32 years, they think they own the place. Hey, Seneschal, how can anyone lose a whole wing?
It seems one of the astrologer's spells went wrong. No one's quite sure exactly what he was up to. And since he's still too embarrassed to talk about it, the odds are we'll never find out. But apparently there was a massive explosion. And within the space of a few moments, all the doors and corridors that used to lead to the South Wing suddenly didn't. For the most part, the people who were in the wing were able to get out, but no one could get in. Legend has it that there were a few people unaccounted for who never got out.
What a horrible thought.
Well, if you don't want to know the answers, don't ask the questions. Now, quiet, please. I'm trying to concentrate.
Julia swallowed an angry retort, and the seneschal went back to frowning over his map. The air grew steadily more stifling and oppressive as the party pressed on into the darkness.
Those sound like some pretty big rats.
One by one, the guards drew their swords. With nothing visible to put the sounds to, Julia's imagination conjured up images of people watching from the darkness. Men and women grown strange and crazy in their isolation. Children who'd never known any other world than the South Wing. Julia took a firm grip on her dagger.
Whoa!
The floor lurched violently and dropped away beneath her. The corridor wall seemed to recede into the distance and then return, sweeping in and out in the space of a moment. Her sense of left and right and up and down reversed itself and then spun her dizzily round and round before snapping back to normal.
Oh. Seneschal?
Over here, Princess.
A sudden darkness swallowed the lantern light, and she felt she had to keep moving, but every step seemed harder than the one before, and her muscles ached with the effort it took to press on. A hideous pressure built within and around her, trying to force her back, but Julia wouldn't give in. That wasn't her way. The pressure reached a peak, but Julia could feel there were others in the darkness with her, helping her to fight back. She drew on her own strength and theirs, and was suddenly propelled forward. And then the light came back, and the world was steady again. Julia sank onto her haunches. She was exhausted and wringing with sweat, as though she'd been running for hours on end. But when she glanced around, she found she was still in the same dark corridor. The only light came from a single lantern, held by a guard crouching beside her who looked almost as bad as she felt. Julia frowned suddenly and looked back the way she'd come. The Seneschal was leaning weakly against a wall, glowering at one of his maps, but there was no trace of the other 11 guards.
What the hell happened? Where are the other guards?
The south wing is trapped inside some kind of barrier, presumably set up when the astrologer's spell backfired.
He glanced down the corridor, but the impenetrable dark gave nothing away.
The other guards must still be on the other side of the barrier. Typical. The guards are never around when they're needed.
Julia had an impulse to grab the Seneschal by the shoulders and shake some sense into him, but she fought it down and smiled at him reasonably.
Sir Seneschal, we can't just leave them here.
Oh, they'll be safe enough. We can pick them up on our way back. It's their own fault, anyway. We broke through that barrier because we refused to be beaten. And because at the end we worked together. Those other guards weren't up to that. A pity, but never mind. We've made it into the South Wing, and that's all that matters. The first people in 32 years. Well, come on. There's no point in standing about here. There's work to be done.
What? Wait, hold on.
Julia and the guard hurried after him. She studied the guard covertly as they followed the Seneschal deeper into the south wing. He was short and stocky, with a compact muscular frame and heavily muscled arms. All in all, he looked rather like a giant who'd been cut off at the knees. He couldn't have been much more than 40, but there was a certain grimness to his face that made him seem a lot older. His broad, heavily boned features were capped by close-cropped hair of so light a blonde as to be nearly white, and there was a wary watchfulness to his eyes that Julia found reassuring. Whatever happened, this guard wasn't the kind to be caught unawares.
My name's Padin, in case you were wondering.
I hadn't realized I was staring.
You weren't? Very much. But there's not much I don't notice.
Keep that attitude and we may get out of this alive.
The Seneschal stopped and gazed thoughtfully at a side turning.
Do you see anything down there?
Perhaps.
Hey! You could at least warn us when you're about to rush off somewhere.
The Seneschal paid them no notice and continued down the corridor. He led them through a baffling series of twists and turns, down corridors and up stairways, in and out of cobwebbed doors and passages, until the princess had lost all sense of time and direction. She began to feel strangely disoriented, as though she were standing still and everything else was moving around her. Badin padded at her side like a cat on the prowl, his eyes constantly searching for possible dangers. Anywhere else, Julia would have found such behavior intensely irritating. But ever since she'd entered the South Wing, she'd had the feeling someone was watching and waiting in the dark beyond the lantern's light. No matter where she looked or how quickly she turned her head, she never saw anyone. But still the feeling persisted, gnawing unmercifully at her nerves until she could have screamed from sheer frustration. She clutched her dagger hilt until her knuckles ached and cursed herself for a fool for ever having volunteered to join the Seneschal's party. She glared at his unresponsive back and then had to pull up short to avoid crashing into it as he came to yet another sudden halt. He stood still a moment, his head tilted back like a hound searching the air for an elusive scent. And then he slowly lowered his head and turned to face her.
Something's wrong.
How do you mean?
I'm not sure. Whatever spell the astrologer attempted all those years ago, it must have been a damn sight more powerful than he was willing to admit. It's still here, echoing in the wood and stone, trembling on the air.
You mean we're in danger here?
Yes. No, I don't know.
The Seneschal frowned unhappily at Bodine and Julia, as though expecting them to come up with an answer, and then turned his back on them.
We're wasting time. The entrance to the treasury isn't far. Let's get on.
The silence bothered Julia more than anything, and not just because it reminded her of her time in the dark wood. The endless quiet seemed to smother every sound, as though the silent wing resented any disturbing of its peace. Bodine methodically swept the darkness with his gaze, checking every door and passageway they passed. But there was never any sign to show the party was being watched or followed. And yet, in some strange way, it was the very absence of any sign or sound that convinced Julia they were not alone. All her instincts screamed to her of danger, near and deadly, and she knew with a deep inner certainty that something evil watched and waited in the darkness beyond the light. A blind panic welled up within her, and she crushed it ruthlessly. She'd be scared later, when she had the time. There was no time to be scared now. The corridor grew suddenly narrower, the walls crowding in out of the dark. The Seneschal's lantern shed a dull yellow glow over faded tapestries and portraits of men and women long dead. He stopped suddenly before a closed, ornately carved door and frowned thoughtfully. All at once, Julia felt a presence close at hand, something dark and dangerous and horribly familiar. She shot a glance at Bodine, who was staring back the way they'd come. He hefted his sword with casual competence, but didn't seem particularly worried. Julia glared at the closed door and shuddered despite herself. There was something awful on the other side of that door. She could feel it in her bones. She licked her dry lips and hefted her dagger.
Are you all right?
I'm fine. I've got a bad feeling about this place, that's all.
It's just the dark. Don't let it throw you.
It's not just that. Don't you listen to your instincts?
All the time. But mostly I trust my eyes and ears. And so far I haven't seen or heard one damn thing to suggest there's anybody in this wing except us and a few spiders.
Well, there's something in here with us. And we're getting closer to it all the time.
If you two have quite finished, you might possibly be interested to learn that we're almost at the end of our journey. Beyond this door lies the South Tower, and beyond that lies the main entrance to the treasury, through which we must pass to reach the armory.
Are you sure?
Of course I'm sure.
Then why have you kept us waiting all this time?
Because this door doesn't feel right.
What's wrong with it?
I know this door leads to the South Tower, but I keep getting the feeling that it doesn't.
Are you saying we're lost?
Of course we're not lost. I'm just not entirely sure where we are.
Terrific.
The Seneschal glared at the door and then reached cautiously for the handle. Julia tensed and held her dagger out before her, ready to strike at whatever lay beyond the threshold. Bright light flared around the edges of the door, throwing back the darkness. Julia and the Seneschal fell back, startled by the sudden glare, and Bodine moved quickly forward to stand between them and the door. He waited a moment while his eyes adjusted to the new light. Bright daylight flooded into the corner.
What is it?
Come and take a look. You're not going to believe this.
Julia glared about her warily before moving over to join the Seneschal at Bodine's side. Her sense of imminent danger had faded to a vague unease, but she still couldn't shake the feeling they were being watched. Nerves, she told herself angrily, and looked through the door. She blinked dazedly into the light for a moment, and then realized she was looking out into an endless sky. Clouds floated before her, soft and wet and puffy, so close she could almost reach out and touch them. She looked up.
What? That's the ground!
That it is. Not quite in the right place, is it?
The view was upside down, the ground 100 feet above her. Julia closed her eyes and waited for her stomach to settle before looking again. Heights didn't usually bother her, but the upended view's casual defiance of the natural order of things disturbed her deeply.
It's very interesting.
Yes, isn't it?
Are you smiling? What's so good about all this?
Well, it's just... well, it's a view from the South Tower, Princess. Or at least from where the South Tower used to be. If you look down, or rather up, you can see the moat quite clearly. Fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. It's not just an illusion, you know. Somehow, within this doorway, space itself has been inverted. I can feel it. I can feel it most distinctly. I suppose if someone were to step through this door, they'd fall up rather than down.
Well then, after you.
Badin stared up at the ground, frowning.
If the tower's been missing all this time, why hasn't anyone noticed it before? It should have been obvious from outside.
Actually, no. The castle's exterior is mainly illusion. It wouldn't surprise me if upon your arrival you thought it was quite small,
You're right. I'd forgotten.
At least now we know what happened to the other search parties.
What do you... oh.
Obvious when you think about it. Like you, Sir Seneschal, they must have decided to enter the treasury through the South Tower. It was the main entrance, after all. Unfortunately, their trackers weren't in your league. They had no inkling that this door had become a death trap. So, blinded by the light, they just walked right in and fell up to their deaths.
But someone would have found the bodies.
They most likely ended up in the moat or near it. And the moat monster's always hungry.
We can't be sure all the parties came this way. And even if they did, I can't believe none of them would have survived the trap.
Maybe there are other traps you haven't found yet.
For a long moment, the three of them just stared at each other. Well, the Seneschal turned away and carefully leaned out the door to look around.
All right. Where do we go now? We can't get into the treasury this way.
Actually, I rather think we can. I've just had an idea.
Can't you just feel your heart sinking?
The South Tower may be missing, but the door that leads to the treasury is still there. I can see it, just a little further along what is now the outer wall. Even more to the point, there's a stairway that connects these two doors, built onto the wall.
A stairway? Is it intact?
For the most part. The supports that held it in place seem to have vanished with the tower, but it looks secure enough, as long as we're careful.
Let me get this straight. You expect us to go out that door, crawl along an unsupported crumbling stairway, carefully ignoring the 100-foot drop, just to reach another door that's probably locked anyway?
Precisely. Julie looked at Badin.
You hit him first. You're nearer.
You won't be in any real danger.
Damn right I won't. I'm not going.
Princess Julia, I am going. So is Badin. If you wish to stay behind and wait for our return, or if you want to try to find your way back through the dark without me, that is up to you.
Julia glared at him and then rounded on Badin, who shrugged helplessly.
You agree?
Sorry, Princess. The Seneschal's in charge.
All right. Let's get this over with.
The Seneschal moved over to look out the doorway. He craned his neck to get a better view of what lay above the lintel, and then nodded happily.
The stairs begin directly above the door. The only problem's going to be the gravity switch. But as long as we get a good grip on the lintel first... Well, don't just stand there, Badin. Make a stirrup for me.
The guard moved quickly forward and cupped his hands together. The Seneschal set his foot in the stirrup, positioned his weight carefully, and then took firm hold of the lintel with both hands. He glanced quickly out of the door and then nodded to Badin. Julia gaped as the Seneschal's body flipped gracefully upside down through the doorway. He shot upwards out of sight, his hands still clinging fiercely to the lintel. There was a long silence, and then the hands suddenly disappeared.
Are you all right, sir?
Of course I'm all right. Give me a chance to get a little further along the stairs, and then send out the princess. And tell her to watch her step. It's slippery out here.
Julia looked at Badin, who swallowed dryly.
Take your time, Julia. There's no rush.
What gets me is we volunteered for this.
It beats collecting horse manure for the gardens, but only just. Ready?
Let me just put my dagger away. Now it's up to you to defend us.
I'll do my best. Step up now. You've got a good grip on the lintel.
Just a moment. Okay. I'm ready.
All right.
Gravity changed while she was still in midair. Up was suddenly down, and her head swam madly as she found herself hanging by one hand from the door. Beneath her kicking feet, there was nothing but air, and she didn't dare look down. She reached out with her free hand and stubbed her fingers on the rough stone of the stairway. She grinned fiercely, grabbed hold, and pulled herself up onto the first step. It was broad and wide and seemed comfortingly solid. She pressed herself against the castle wall and looked around. The stairway stretched out before her, jagged and broken and punctuated here and there by yard-wide gaps in the stonework. Some 50 feet away, further down the wall, the Seneschal was crouched before another door, his brow creased in thought.
Sir Seneschal, I'm going to get you for this.
Ah, there you are, Princess. I would have come back to help you, but I'm afraid I got distracted by this door. I was miles away.
I wish I were.
Julia stared uncomfortably at the view spread out below her. The forest sprawled greenly across the horizon in whichever direction she looked, and it was hard for Julia to imagine such an ancient and magnificent sight falling to darkness and decay under the long night. She strained her eyes until they ached, but as yet there was no sign of the dark wood itself. She wondered if Rupert had passed through the darkness yet on his way to the High Warlock. She tried to remember exactly how long he'd been gone and felt vaguely ashamed when she found she wasn't sure. Julia scowled, and turning away from the forest, she concentrated on the stairway before her, one problem at a time. Her frown deepened as she realized much of the stonework was cracked and pitted from its long exposure to the wind and rain, and several of the steps hung at crazy angles from the castle wall, apparently held in place only by a little mortar and accumulated pigeon droppings.
Is it safe for me to come out yet, Princess?
Oh, sorry, Badine. All clear.
Julia scrambled down onto the next step so as to give him more room. She'd barely made it before Badine came flying upside down through the door, somersaulting in midair as the gravity changed. His grip on the lintel never even looked like slipping, and in the space of a few moments, he was crouching gracefully on the top step and looking interestedly down at the view.
Oh, do stop hanging around. The treasury door isn't locked.
Julia glanced across just in time to see him tug energetically at the door. The act of pulling the door open nearly knocked the Seneschal from his perch. He quickly regained his balance, stared dubiously into the dark opening, and then jumped into it, flipping head over heels upwards as he went.
Did you see that?
I did. Seems that space reverts back to normal through that door.
That man has nerves of steel. Either that, or absolutely no sense of self-preservation.
She glared at the weathered, rough-hewn steps that lay between her and the treasury door. There were only a few gaps wide enough to require jumping, but the steps on each side of the breaks looked decidedly precarious. Julia looked down, and then wished she hadn't. The drop seemed to get longer every time she looked. She studied the battered stairway. If the Seneschal hadn't already made the journey, she'd have called it impossible. Julia gathered up her long dress and tucked the front and back end securely into her belt. She glared dubiously at the next step down, and then lowered herself cautiously onto it. Julia waited a moment for it to settle, and then moved on to the next step. Slowly, she made her way down the stairway, one step at a time, testing each slab of stone carefully before committing her full weight to it. Time and again, she stood motionless while the ancient stonework groaned and shifted beneath her. The crumbling mortar fell away in sudden little streams. The first jump was the hardest.
What's wrong?
A gap. Six steps have broken away. Looks like a gap of about 15 feet.
So jump it.
Easy for you to say.
What did the Seneschal do?
He probably jumped it.
So it should be none too hard for a woman like yourself.
All right. But step back, Badine. I'm going to take a running start, and I don't think these stones can support our combined weight. All right. Here goes. One, two, three.
For a brief moment, there was nothing but open space beneath her. Julia rose cautiously to her feet and moved down to the next step to give Badine enough room for his jump. He made it easily, landing in a cat-like crouch that barely stirred the stonework. The two of them shared a grin and then carried on down the stairs. one step at a time. Julia couldn't stop shivering from the wind, and in her eagerness to get out of the cold, she hurried down the last few steps without bothering to check them first. The icy wind tugged and buffeted her as she stood staring at the final gap in the stairway. It was only a yard or so wide, and once over, it was only two more steps to the treasury door. Julia checked that her dress was still tucked securely in place, studied the distance to the far step, and then jumped the gap easily.
Julia!
Oh, it's okay, Badine. I've got a handle on the next step.
Julia, hanging on by her fingertips, watched the slab she had landed on tumble lazily end over end on its long way down into the dirty green waters of the moat. She tried not to think of how many other people might have ended up there. She clutched fiercely at the rough stone step and waited for her heart to settle.
Hang on, Julia. I'll jump across and then pull you up.
Oh, no, no, stay where you are, Badine. It can't hold us both up.
Slowly, she pulled herself up over the edge of the step, stopping every few seconds to let the shifting stone settle. Her arm muscles ached unbearably, but she didn't dare hurry herself. Eventually, she was able to hook one knee over the edge, and then, with one heart-stopping lunge, she hauled herself up onto the step. For long moments, she just lay there in an ungainly heap, feeling the stone beneath her. Her heart hammered furiously against her breastbone, and sweat trickled down her face and sides, despite the chill wind.
When I get inside, I'm gonna brain the seneschal with the nearest blunt instrument. All right, Badine, come across, but aim for this step. I don't think the other will take your weight.
Badine made the jump look simple. The stone slab absorbed his landing with only the faintest of tremors, and Julia turned her attention to the open treasury door before her.
After all this, the treasury had better be worth it.
She took one last look at the forest spread out below, and then stepped through the doorway.
Woo! Now where in the world is the seneschal?
Julia dove to the side as Badine came somersaulting in. She turned to him and was surprised to note the man was blushing. She grinned as the answer hit her and carefully rearranged her dress so that her legs were once again covered. Badine concentrated all his attention on shutting the treasury door.
It's safe to turn around again.
Yes, good to hear.
It didn't bother you on the stairway.
That was different. Here it wouldn't be at all proper. I mean, what would the seneschal say?
Something vexing, no doubt.
Julia stared curiously about her. As her eyes grew used to the gloom, she realized they were in a vast hall, illuminated only by the sparse light that trickled past the edges of the many shuttered windows. The timbered ceiling towered above them, choking with cobwebs. Thick streams of the dirty gossamer hung from every surface, though there was surprisingly little dust. Tightly packed bookcases lined the walls, and dozens of chairs stood before dozens of desks, all joined one to the other by their cobweb shrouds.
I wonder what this place was.
If this was the treasury, I suppose this could be the old counting house.
Correct.
Where the devil did you come from?
I was merely exploring the area. But yes, this was the counting house. Who knows how many tons of gold and silver and copper passed through this room? The whole wealth of the Forest Kingdom must have passed through here at one time or another.
Do you suppose any of the gold and silver and copper might still be around?
Who knows?
I'm beginning to be glad I came.
Let's find the old armory first. Then perhaps we can consider a little treasure hunting. This way, Princess.
Julia grinned, and she and Badine followed the seneschal through the side door into the next room. Julia stopped just inside the door and wrinkled her nose as the smell hit her. The darkened antechamber would have seemed small and dingy even when it was still in everyday use, but after 32 years of neglect, the place stank of damp and decay. There were no windows, and the only light was the familiar golden glow of the seneschal's lantern. Mildew and wood rot speckled the wall paneling, and what had once been a rich, deep pile carpet crunched dryly under Julia's feet as she moved slowly into the room. A single chair lay overturned in a corner, cocooned with spiderwebs.
Now make sure not to...
That That's too big to be rats.
Stay close to me, Julia.
What about me?
You're too thin to be anybody's meal. They'll leave you alone.
It stopped. Maybe just something settling.
I don't think so. It sounded like something living. And familiar.
Familiar? How?
I can't quite put a finger on it.
Hush! Over there.
The Seneschal drew their attention to the door on the far side of the antechamber. It was slightly ajar, and the three of them crept quietly over to stand before it. Julia scowled, took a firm grip on her dagger, and peered cautiously through the door's narrow gap. All was silence and darkness. Julia glanced at Bodine, who looked at the Seneschal for his orders. There then followed a short conference between the three of them, consisting mainly of looks, shrugs, and scowls, until Julia lost her patience. Julia padded into the room, followed closely by the Seneschal and Bodine. The still air was dank and oppressive, with a faint scent of rot and decay that grated on Julia's nerves. The Seneschal held up his lantern, and the floor shimmered, covered with gold and silver and precious jewels. Stout oaken treasure chests lay on their sides, broken open and spilling their contents onto the floor. The lids of the chests had been torn clean away, the wood scored and split as though by claws. She glanced quickly around, but there was nowhere for anyone to hide in the cramped little room that met her gaze.
I'm going to check the other doors.
You do that. We'll be right here.
As the Seneschal departed, Bodine began filling his pockets with coins and jewels.
This your hazard pay?
Take what you can when you can. That's always been my motto. And any one of these jewels is worth more than they pay me in a year.
Well, don't load yourself down too heavily. We may still have to fight our way out of here.
There's no one here to fight, Princess.
Somebody must have broken open these chests, and fairly recently at that.
How can you tell?
No cobwebs.
Julia left him thinking that over and moved away to study a pair of sheathed swords mounted on a wall plaque. If there was to be any fighting, Julia wanted a sword in her hand. She brushed away the cobwebs and reached for one.
Still looks new. Good balance?
She tried the edge on her thumb and raised an eyebrow when it drew blood.
Now, let's see what's around here.
The Seneschal tugged at the closed shutters until they swung slowly open on protesting hinges. Light flooded into the room, and the carpeted floor was suddenly awash with dozens of scuttling spiders darting back and forth, driven mad by the sudden light after so many years of darkness. The soldier was suddenly on top of a dusty table as the spiders quickly disappeared into 100 nooks and crannies. Bodine looked carefully around to make sure that they were all gone, then climbed down from the table with as much dignity as he could muster.
Phew! All this for spiders?
Well, spiders can be poisonous.
Yeah, but you just give them a good stomp and you're done with it. Now, rats, that would have been a completely...
The man, having dropped the lantern, staggered back from the open second door. Blood was rilling down his chest, and then the demons erupted out of the darkness.
No!
Incredibly, the demons retreated back into the darkness from which they'd come, leaving their prey behind.
Seneschal, are you okay?
Oh.
He's alive. That's something, right?
Yeah. Help me help him up. I've got him. Now find the lantern. We're going to want as much light as we can get.
Julia looked around for the lantern and snatched it up.
The fall put it out.
The demons watched from their darkness, but made no move to follow them.
We've got to get out of here.
Right. Just back steadily towards the door. No sudden moves. Nothing that might upset them. Take it easy, and we'll get out of this in one piece yet.
But they're demons. You saw what they did to the Seneschal.
So what? Ram a yard of cold steel through them and they'll die just as easily as any man. I ought to know. I've done it before, remember?
How many of the damn things are there?
A dozen, no more.
Why aren't they coming after us?
Beats me. Maybe the sudden light from the window blinded them, and they don't know how many of us there are.
Once they realize, we're in trouble.
Right. How much further to the door?
Bodine glanced back over his shoulder.
Nearly there, Princess.
How's the Seneschal?
I don't know. He's in pretty bad shape.
How bad?
Bad enough.
And he's the only one who knows the way out of here. Terrific.
They'd almost made it to the open door when the demons charged. They burst from the darkness, their eyes glowing blood red. Their twisted, pallid shapes came flying through the dim light like so many misshapen ghosts.
Vadim! Antechamber! Now!
Vadim threw the seneschal into the antechamber and then sprang through after him, Julia close behind. After slamming the door shut in the demons' faces, Vadim then sheathed his sword and hung on to the doorknob with both hands to keep them from pulling the door open.
Julia, lock the door!
There's no key!
How about bolts? Oh,
there are two of them, top and bottom. They're both rusty.
What are you waiting for?
I got the top one.
Now the bottom!
It's rusted through!
Damn! I'm gonna step back and see if that one bolt holds it shut.
But if it doesn't?
I can't stand here forever, Julia. And they'll scratch through the door soon enough anyway.
Vadim put one hand on his scabbard, and with a quick jerk, he let go of the door.
It's holding.
Not for long, though.
It doesn't have to.
Seneschal.
We've got to lead them into the counting room.
The seneschal was unsteady on his feet, his face pale, his chest streaked with drying blood. But his eyes were focused and alert. Vadim moved quickly over to support him, and the seneschal nodded his thanks.
The demons will break in here any minute. Vadim, help me through that door into the counting room. Princess, you follow us, but stay in the doorway so that the demons can see you. When they have, you can fall back to join us. Don't let them lose sight of you, but don't let them catch you either. Got it?
Not really. Are you sure you know what you're doing?
Oh, of course. I always know what I'm doing. Now, give me the lantern.
Julia and Vadim exchanged a glance. The antechamber door trembled as the demons hammered on it.
What the hell? Here's the lantern. A short life, but an interesting one. Get him out of here, Vadim. I'll hold the doorway.
Vadim nodded curtly and half led, half carried the seneschal out of the antechamber and into the counting room. Julia turned back to face the shaking door before her, and she hefted her sword uncertainly. Silhouetted against the light, she made an obvious target. She frowned and then backed away from the groaning door to stand hidden in the shadows of the open counting room door. She'd let the demons see her when she was good and ready, and not before. The corpse-pale demons poured into the antechamber. Their eerie, pupil-less eyes glowed crimson in the gloom as they peered hungrily about them for their prey. Julia stood very still and waited patiently for something to come within range of her sword. The demons sniffed at the still air and then lowered their misshapen heads to the floor like so many hounds searching out a scent. The sight might have been funny if it hadn't been so horrible. And then either they found a trail, or Julia made a sound without realizing, for one by one the demons raised their heads to stare unblinkingly in her direction, and Julia knew the shadows weren't deep enough to hide her. She stepped quickly forward to block the doorway, sweeping her sword back and forth before her. Light gleamed dully the length of the blade. One of the demons stepped forward. The creature fell to writhe on the thick carpet, and then the other demons were upon her. The seneschal had told her to lead the demons back into the counting room, but Julia knew that once she fell back through the doorway, they'd roll right over her. The narrowness of the door meant the demons could only come at her in twos and threes, but it was only a matter of time before the sheer weight of numbers would wear her down, and she'd have to retreat back into the counting room, and then they'd take her. Julia swung her sword with all her weight behind it, and demon blood flew on the air as a growing ache built in her muscles. She ripped open a demon's belly with a sideways sweep of her blade, and then had to fall back a step to avoid the clawed hand that narrowly missed her throat. She realized she was no longer protected by the doorway, and fell back again as the demon surged forward. And then Vadim was beside her, adding his sword to hers. The demons fell back before the two flashing blades. The two stepped back to the counting room, and Julia leaped aside as Vadim slammed the door shut in their faces.
Julia, use the bolts!
There aren't any!
That's fine. When I give the word, head for the outer door!
Right.
Julia looked around just in time to see the seneschal push the outer door shut, plunging the room into darkness. Julia bit her lip and hefted her sword.
I hope somebody knows what they're doing.
You ready?
Yeah.
The door surged open a few inches, pushing him back. A clawed hand snaked past the door, glowing palely in the dark.
No, Julia! Go now!
Badin jumped back, and Julia ran for the outer door. The demons flew after her, ignoring Badin as he hid behind the open door. Julia got to the outer door and pushed it open. Sunlight flooded into the room. The seneschal grabbed her arm and pulled her to one side, but the demons just stumbled on, blinded by the sudden light. Julia grinned savagely as she finally understood. Badin was coming up right behind the demons, and she'd be damned if she wasn't going to join in on the fun. It was the easiest thing in the world to drive the surviving demons through the door and out into the long drop. Julia lowered her sword and sank wearily to the floor. Her head ached fiercely, and her arms were as heavy as lead. Fatigue shivered in her legs, and just sitting there with her back pressed against the wall, Julia felt like she could sleep for a week. She shuddered at the thought. It had been bad enough lying in bed at night, knowing that while she slept, the dark wood drew steadily closer. But somehow she'd always thought the castle's thick walls would keep her safe from demons. It came hard to her to realize that nowhere was safe anymore. Julia clutched her sword fiercely and wondered if she'd ever dare sleep again. Badin bent over her.
Princess, you're hurt.
Cuts and bruises, Badin. Nothing more. Help me up.
He helped her stand and then waited patiently as she leaned heavily on his supporting arm until her head cleared. After a while, she pushed him away and turned to the seneschal, who was busy relighting his lantern with flint and steel.
How are you feeling, Sir Seneschal?
I've felt better, Princess. It probably looks worse than it is.
You looked pretty bad when we dragged you out from under those demons.
Don't remind me. I thought my time had come.
You should rest for a while.
I'm all right. Don't fuss. There'll be plenty of time to rest when we get back. Right now, I'm more worried about the armory. I hate to think how much damage the demons could have caused there. How did those creatures get into the castle?
Somebody let them in. We have a traitor among us.
For a moment, they just stood and stared at each other. Badin scowled, and the seneschal shook his head dazedly.
Oh dear.
Julia smiled grimly.
Remember the demons who wait and watch outside our walls at night? Well, now we know where they hide during the day.
I just can't believe it, Princess. Who'd be mad enough to bring demons into the castle itself?
More to the point, why bring them into the south wing?
Of course. The armory. It's the armory.
You're hurt, Julia. You shouldn't be running.
We'll deal with that later. Follow him. He's the only one who knows his way out of here.
They followed the seneschal through the antechamber and through dozens of dimly lit rooms and corridors, his lantern bobbing ahead of them like a beckoning will-o'-the-wisp on a moonless night. Julia soon lost all sense of direction and concentrated on running. She had a strong feeling that if she stumbled or fell, the seneschal would just leave her behind. He finally came to a halt before a pair of massive oaken doors, easily 8 feet tall and almost as wide. The carved and curlicued wood gleamed dully in the golden lantern light.
No. Oh, no.
For a moment, the seneschal just stood there, staring into the darkness beyond the doors. And then his shoulders slumped and all the strength went out of him. He staggered and would have fallen if Julia and Badin hadn't been there to support him.
What is it, Sir Seneschal? What's so important about the damn doors?
Don't you understand? The door opened. The armory's been breached. The katana is unguarded.
He shrugged free of Julia and Badin and led them into the old armory. Beyond the massive doors lay a towering hall so vast the Seneschal's lantern couldn't begin to light it. A suit of armor loomed up out of the darkness, and then Julia relaxed slightly when she realized it was only an exhibit. Dozens of huge display cases lay scattered across the hall, showing swords and daggers, longbows and lances, maces and morning stars in all their variations. Julia peered raptly about her as she moved slowly through the vast, dark hall in her narrow pool of light, awestruck by the sheer size of the collection. Rupert's ancestors had built up the armory over 12 generations, weapon upon weapon, until now it would have taken more than one man's lifetime just to catalog it all. Julia felt her hackles rise as for the first time she realized just how ancient Forest Castle was. The seneschal stopped suddenly before a dusty wall plaque set in a deep recess that hid it from casual view. The single silver scabbard it bore was tarnished and begrimed from long neglect, but there was no sign of the sword it once held.
It's gone. The katana is gone.
But the Sword of Compulsion is our only hope against the demons. Who'd be mad enough to steal it?
Somebody who stood to gain if the castle fell. And these days, that description covers an awful lot of ground.
All this way. All this way for nothing. Come on, Sir Seneschal. Let's get out of here.
Of course, Princess. The king must be told.
The seneschal turned his back on the empty scabbard and stared out into the darkness.
Somewhere in this castle, there's a traitor. We've got to find him and the katana before it's too late.